From awaytogarden.com and robinhoodradio.com, this is Away to Garden with Margaret Roach, your weekly invitation to dig in and grow.
If someone says hydrangea, chances are many of us first conjure classic images of big blue mop tops or maybe one of the paniculata types with their conical white to pink to tan flowers. So you think you know a hydrangea when you see it. Well, chances are, if today's guest were asked to describe the genus, his version would be a whole lot more diverse than ours. Dan Hinckley is a longtime plant explorer, nurseryman, teacher, and gardener. And above all, he says he's committed to above-average garden plants. So today we're going to find out from Dan just what, when the subject is hydrangeas, qualifies as above average and even exceptional, and maybe even take a peek into the future of what traits hydrangeas of tomorrow might show off, too. So welcome to the program, Dan, all the way from across the country out there in the Pacific Northwest. How are you?
Very good.
Yeah,
Thank you very much.
It's
great to be with you, Margaret.
It's good to hear reunited. It's good to hear your voice. I guess a little background first. So you're sort of north of Seattle. Are you not in Kingston area of Washington?
Yeah, north and west
north
of
and
Seattle.
West.
So we're in the West Sound country, looking back across Puget Sound to Seattle.
Not a bad view.
Not a bad view.
So a little background for people first. I was, you know, when I think of you, I think of you all the time because I swear to you that over the years, not a month has gone by in my garden during the season when I don't uncover in a bed or in the compost heap sometimes one of those turquoise-colored plastic labels from the old Heronswood mail-order nursery that you found what was it? 1987 maybe was that nursery
yeah,
founded?
Yeah, started in 1987. Yeah, those turquoise labels with large prices and attached to very small plants.
Well, those plants were a very good investment, as it turns out, because many of them, as small as they were then, are very big now. So something went right.
Good.
So tell us about, like, Heronswood then was a nursery, and now it's something else, yes?
Yeah, I'm having a wonderful time here. It was a nursery from 1987 to 2006. Then it had a period of 6 years where nothing was happening here. The gates were closed, but since 2012, it's been owned by the Port Gamble Sklallam Indian Tribe. And I've been brought back in as the director and in charge of its renovation efforts. So we've reassembled a staff. We have a great volunteer base, and we're re-revealing the garden and making it better, not trying to recreate what it was,
right,
but trying to add a polish and then go forward and put it on good footing for future generations of gardeners to enjoy.
And so it's open on Fridays, I think, and then sometimes other days as well, and there's special
events
as well?
Yeah, we're open five days a year as the garden opens,
mm-hmm,
where we have plant sales, but then every Friday during the growing season, every Friday and the fourth Saturday of each month. And that's going to increase because our attendance is increasing. And so next year we'll be open every Friday and Saturday during the growing season.
Oh.
And hopefully we'll continue to add days on going forward.
So as promised, we're going to talk about, I say hydrangea, you say...
Hydrangea.
I thought you said hydrangea. I thought you said
I'm the hydrangea.
Hydrangea.
No, they all refer to the same plant.
I'm teasing.
And it's a great, genus of plants. They're just chock full of wonderful species and a greater diversity than most people realize.
So, you know, I know that we have some Native American species. I think like arborescence, like the one people might know is Annabelle. She's a big white round ball of flowers, and a lot of old-fashioned homes have them. And we have quercifolia, right, the oak leaf in the southeastern United States maybe. Is that a native?
Right.
And I know there are some Asian ones, but you've sort of seen the globe. I mean, you've seen them in many places. Tell us about some of the range of where you've seen hydrangeas.
Well, gosh, you know, it's pretty amazing. As you say, just two species in North America,
mm-hmm,
so a paucity of species here, but as you go south into Mexico, the number of species begins to skyrocket right in through Central America and then into northern part of South America. That's really a hotbed of speciation of hydrangeas. In fact, just last year, additional 15 species of hydrangea were identified in the mountains of Bolivia and Colombia and Venezuela and Peru. So really, our knowledge of the genus in that part of the globe is pretty small. And,
wow.
And it's also fairly exciting because these all are all represented by climbing species.
Oh. And
always evergreen. They're not shrubs or trees, but they're evergreen climbing species. And their colors range from pure white to very, very rich red. And that continues all the way down south to Terra del Fuego. You can have evergreen climbing hydrangeas all the way to the southern part of Argentina and Chile. So, you know, even though in our minds we think of, as you've already mentioned, the mop heads and the lace caps and the shrubs that we have grown in our gardens for generations in this country, really the lion's share of the genus is unrecognizable to most gardeners.
Huh. So what about Asia? In parts of Asia, have you seen diversity, and what are they like, or is there a generality?
Yeah, pretty extraordinary. I have a good number of species in my garden from Taiwan, Vietnam, northern part of India, Sikkim, and the Arunachal Pradesh, and Bhutan, certainly a hotbed of speciation is in western China, and it radiates out of all directions from there. And even though when you generally see a hydrangea in the wild in blossom, even a lay gardener will recognize it as a hydrangea.
Mm-hmm.
But the foliage is quite diverse, and of course the flowers can be across the board as well. But generally speaking, the floral format of a hydrangea is that cluster of fertile flowers that is surrounded by sterile bracts that give us that that gestalt of the lace cap hydrangea look.
So you're wandering in the wilderness in one of these places, either very far south or across the ocean around the world, and with colleagues who are savvy plant collectors with many years of experience, and you see something that is in this genus, and you don't, like, dig up a shrub or a climbing plant and bring it home. Do you wait to collect seed? How does it work? Because, I mean, I'm assuming from what you're saying, these are traits, like you said, the color red and these climbing or the evergreen foliage, or, you know, these are traits that you might want to bring into the sort of gene pool of breeding and so forth, right, for future plants?
Right, right.
So
yeah, plants don't work. And in fact, from Asia itself, you cannot bring a hydrangea plant back in. There's restrictions. It's actually a restricted genus by from plants, but not from seeds. So the collections of these plants are from seed, and just so everyone knows, I am limited to 50 seeds of any one collection.
Oh.
So when you're talking about 50 seeds of a hydrangea, you're basically talking about the tiniest pinch of seed possible. You would barely be able to see 50 seeds of hydrangea. They're so incredibly tiny.
Wow. So you climb every mountain and forage every stream in order to bring home a pinch of dust. Is this what you're telling me, Dan?
A pinch of hydrangea seed. Yes. But it's a very efficient way to look at a wide range of traits, and so I can make, you know, a collection of 30 different individuals of the same species while I'm on any one trip, and then grow those on, and they'll be in blossom in 2 to 3 years, and then I can look at the variation within those seedlings.
So tell us about some of the wonderful species that either you've collected or that you're interested in or that are actually in the nursery today. You know, like, where should we begin? I mean, who should we begin with? You said something about, like, leaf, interesting foliage. And I think,
yeah.
Yeah, so maybe we should start with some that have exceptional foliage.
Yeah, let's do that because foliage first, right?
Indeed.
So the Aspera types, I think a lot of keen gardeners would be familiar with, but the group of Asperas, those are the ones that are large foliaged and generally feel very velvety. In fact, look velvety, sometimes almost like black-green in color, but just demanding that you touch it.
Right.
And the Asperas are very diverse, and to be quite honest, that group is mostly misunderstood. It hasn't been sorted out very well.
I'm misunderstood also. Does that make me a hydrangea?
Yes, we've all known this for a long time.
I knew that.
But so
it's misunderstood. It needs to be sorted out taxonomically.
It needs to be sorted out. The nomenclature is incredibly confused and confusing, and that's certainly one of my goals is to try to collect as many of these as possible and to get them better understood taxonomically, botanically. And it's not until we truly understand something do we really know it, and that is that's one of my goals. But in the process of doing that, I've come across some great garden-worthy plants. There are two species in that group, the Aspera group, that occur in Japan, and both of them are relatively obscure in cultivation, even though they're both highly ornamental. One is a species that occurs only on Shikoku Island and then a couple mountains on Honshu, and that's called Hydrangea sokokiana. It's represented in cultivation only by a couple individuals in North America, sadly enough, because it's beautiful. And if on the radio, if I could say everyone visualize a... Did I say a radio in a blogcast?
No, that's right.
if I could say visualize Hydrangea quercifolia with that jagged leafed edge to a leaf about that size, and then you add an arresting layer of felt to that leaf. That's what sokokiana looks like.
Oh,
and it's just absolutely beautiful. So I've been working with that species and trying to work in purple color into that foliage. In that nice jagged edge.
Have there been introductions of any with purple leaves?
Not of that species. We just have our first seedlings. First seedlings coming out right now that have some purple coloration in it. So that's pretty exciting.
Yeah.
The other species from Japan is called Hydrangea involucrata.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a fairly celebrated species in Japan itself. But in North America, not so much. Mm-hmm. It's unfortunate. The flowers are emerge from these enormous rounded buds that are so distinctive. They almost look like a peony bud about ready to burst, and then they open and have a lovely lace cap appearance. So those two, and those would both be hardy in your godforsaken climate.
I'm a five. You're lording over me five. That you're like an eight or something.
we're eight, but not that I want to rub it in.
No,
much.
Not that you do. Good, thank you.
Not that I do.
Aspera, Aspera, the species Aspera, which is in the trade, and there are varieties available, yes? That's like a zone 7-ish or 6-ish maybe plant, or what?
Yeah,
what is that?
I always use, I use Philadelphia as my hallmark for that, because I've seen what we call Hydrangea Aspera villosa currently.
Uh-huh.
It won't be called that forever. I've seen that growing successfully in the suburbs of Philadelphia.
Okay.
So I think that is zone 6.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say we could go much further below that.
Right. But that's a great one for people to look for now that gives us some of that felted, velvety sort
Absolutely.
Of leaf, right? That they can.
And beautiful foliage plus just a fantastic floral display of lace cap flowers, bicolor pink and lavender. And, Hydrangea sokokiana, the one I was telling you about from Japan, is a beautiful specimen, was growing at Cornell in New York. So that's also fairly cold.
So what about Is there any, let's see, what about Cerata? Cerata, how do we say that? Is that another species that you have?
Yeah. A lot of affection for that.
Yeah.
And just as I said about involucrata in Japanese horticulture, Cerata, Hydrangea cerata, called the mountain hydrangea, is a real classic Japanese garden plant. It's been collected, forms of it have been collected for centuries. And so because of that, if you explore that species, you'll find countless numbers of cultivars with these beguiling Japanese names, Shirafugi and Izunahana and Jogasaki and all these lovely Japanese names attached to it. That is one of the hardiest of the hydrangeas because they occur quite high in the mountains, all the way up to 8,000 feet, not only in Japan, but also on the Korean Peninsula. I have made one exception in collecting hydrangeas for only by seed, and that was coming across a double-flowered form of that in the wild in southern Korea on a mountain called Chirisan. And there was a rooted piece of that, a rooted stem of that plant, kind of self-layered.
Right.
And I removed that because, of course, if you have a double-flowered form of anything, it doesn't set seed, so there wasn't any opportunity to collect seed of that. I took a rooted piece of it. And that's now securely in the trade under the name of Cherry Sansu, beautiful, very delicate, double pink flowering hydrangea cerata. And
I think it's
charming, absolutely charming.
Okay, so we're going to look for that one. And I think I've read about species Angustipetala. Is that right? Is that did I say
that? And
that
also very distinctive. We've discussed the fact that a lot of people look at hydrangeas and don't recognize them as hydrangeas when they see them in foliage, and that is certainly one of them. It doesn't have a hydrangea look to it at all. Very narrow leaf, almost glossy. And I love about that species, which I've collected in Taiwan, in the mountains of Taiwan, is that it's the earliest blossoming of all hydrangeas in my garden. It will oftentimes be in blossom in late March and early April, so long before any other hydrangeas are setting bud. Hydrangea angustipetala is it's flowering, and on top of that has a beguiling fragrance to the flower.
Now, that's not common in hydrangeas, is it? A fragrance?
That is not common in fragrance, but it's not completely unknown, and that's one of the best species to seek out for that fragrance.
Huh. So that's a possibility that is a trait that we may have more of? Is anyone breeding for fragrance?
To my knowledge, not anyone other than my own very passive breeding program.
Your mad scientist thing over there in the backyard.
It's not too mad. I mean, it's pretty much letting the bees do the work
and me
gathering the seeds, sowing them, and seeing what I get in 3 years' time.
Mm. You know, where I live in Zone 5, as you've pointed out to everyone, which is not in Zone 8, in case people didn't know that, Zone 5 is not in Zone 8, the paniculatas, the panicle hydrangeas, you know, they grow really lustily, and they really, like, with those big white flower heads, they really freshen up the heat-weary sort of midsummer and fall garden. You know, it's great to have that. And I love a lot of the old-timers, like straight paniculata and tardiva. But now when I go to nurseries, like, I start to get a case of the shakes because they've got, like, you know, 400 billion different paniculata sort of varieties or whatever. I think there's close to 100 now, frankly. I think there were 80 or 90 the last time I checked, and that was a few years ago. Anything super about, like, are there ones that you love? Because you really know this genus. Any that you just think are fabulous, or any direction in those that you're excited about at all? Or you just take them or leave them?
You know, I sort of, probably like you, I look at that list and I go cold.
Yeah.
And primarily due to the fact that so many of them are selected for their dumpy squat quality. You know, they want these short squat things in one's garden. And there's no question that species is fantastic. I grew up with it as a kid. The old PG, Hydrangea paniculata grandiflora.
Sure,
you can't beat it. I mean, you cut it down to the ground, right? And it was zone 4 Michigan's where I grew up,
yeah.
If you think you had it bad. And it was, you know, they were beautiful. But now they've started selecting for all of these very dwarf, compact varieties, and I think they've lost their grace. I'm sitting here in my office at Heronswood looking out to 3 hydrangea paniculata seedlings that I grew from seed that I collected on in the Japanese Alps, Honshu, all the way back in 1997. Each one's different, but each of them still possesses that wild, very graceful habit. You know, tall stems, and to me, that's just what that species wants to be. It wants to be set free. It doesn't want to be constrained.
Oh, I second that emotion.
Dwarfness.
Yeah, it was funny because I grow them really, really big. I have, you know, huge old ones, and I mean really, really big. And that's to me what they're meant to be doing, and they're fabulous. You know, I love them. But before we run out of time, we only got maybe 3 minutes or so left. But I want to just double back to quickly to those. What's going on with the climbers? What traits may be coming into our world depending on what zone we're in for the climbers? You said red flowers, evergreen foliage, and which species are those?
Well,
do any of them exist in the trade now?
So many different species. Hydrangea peruviana is a beautiful pink, and then there's Astrolazia, which is from Central America. It's also pink, but we have 3 different evergreen species growing in our gardens here at Heronswood.
Okay.
1 Hydrangea serratifolia, that's Chilean. Hydrangea simonii is from southwestern Mexico. And then Hydrangea integrifolia is the only evergreen climber that comes out of Asia.
Oh.
And the one we have is from seed collected in Taiwan, but I've also seen it in the mountains of Vietnam and in China. So the evergreen climbing hydrangeas at this point are, you know, we're looking at zones 7B and above at this point. But what's exciting is that, you know, all hydrangeas have the potential for crossbreeding with one another. If we can get these pink and red flowering species successfully into cultivation and start doing cross-pollination with the standards, the old stalwart Hydrangea anomala pedialaris, which is the climbing deciduous species, then we do have great potential for working color pinks and reds into the climbing hydrangeas that are hardy all the way to zone 4.
Oh, yeah,
so that's
pretty
pretty exciting stuff.
And you better keep bringing back those pinches of seeds and doing your little experiments over there. I'm so glad to speak to you again. I hope we're going to speak again soon. And I'll tell people, of course, about how to find you at danieljhinckley.com, how to find people at, how to find you at Heronswood, and also your fabulous garden at Wincliffe. Your home garden is also open sometimes.
Absolutely.
So I'm going to give people the FYI on all of that as well with the transcript of the podcast. But it's great to talk to you. Thank you so much.
You too, Margaret.
All right.
Great to hear your voice and stay in touch.
Bye-bye.
All right.
And it's good to talk to all the rest of you as well. Now, don't miss an episode. You can subscribe free to the podcast version on Stitcher or iTunes. Find me anytime at awaytogarden.com or on facebook.com/awaytogarden. And happy gardening meantime.
A Way to Garden with Margaret Roach is a joint production of awaytogarden.com and the smallest NPR station in the nation, Robin Hood Radio.